This is KZSU Stanford. Due to technical difficulties, Mystery Playhouse 90.1 will not be premiered this week in order to present to you live coverage of last week's Stanford basketball game.
3, 2, 1, start. Good afternoon and welcome to the pregame show for today's game between the San Jose State Spartans and the Stanford Cardinal. I'm David Fisher, and along with Susan Slusser, I'll try and provide you with a brief insight into these two teams. San Jose State enters the game with a 1-1 record coming off a big 32-3 victory over New Mexico State last week, following the drubbing they suffered at the hands of the California Golden Bears in their opener 2 weeks ago. For Stanford, it's the season opener, with Jack Elway leading his troops for the second time around, following his 5-6 season a year ago in his first season at the helm of the Stanford squad. Earlier in the week, Coach Elway talked about the situation of starting the season 2 weeks after San Jose State began theirs.
An unusual situation where...
The one aspect of fall workouts Elway has been most pleased with is the condition that his team showed up in 3 weeks ago.
I stepped on a nail, I need a tetanus shot today!
Volleyball!
I stepped on a nail! Need a tetanus shot! Just a rusty nail! Need a tetanus shot!
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care. We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
9.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs.
Today's drama, The Nursery Rhyme Murders. Brookside Home is a private sanitarium located in a densely wooded area in the suburbs. It's about 8 o'clock in the evening as Superintendent Alfred Foster walks down the corridor on his way to visit one of his patients. Good evening, Bert. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Dr. Foster. I've been waiting for you.
You should be asleep by now, Bert.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to come and read to me.
But we can't read to you every night.
But you promised. You said if I ate all my supper, you'd read a story to me. And I eat it all, Dr. Foster. Every bit of it. The cereal and everything. Read to me now, please.
We told you, Bert, that after you'd been here a while, we'd have to stop reading to you at night.
You're not going to read to me?
You're tired tonight. A little feverish, too, I think. I just go to sleep, and in the morning...
I won't. You promised to read me a bedtime story.
Now, you broke your promise. Bert, you mustn't get excited like
you
that.
You broke your promise.
Bert, stay where you are. Don't come any nearer.
You're bad, and I'm going to hurt you.
Bert, no. Take your hands off my throat. Orderly.
I'll make you read me one.
Orderly, hurry. What is it, Dr. Foster? What?
Bert!
Get him off me quick, Andrews, boy.
Let him go.
There. Now stay over there, Bert.
Thank you, Andrews. That was close.
He promised to read to me, and he broke his promise.
You want me to get one of the other orderlies, Dr. Foster?
No, that's all right, Andrews. Bert just got a little excited. I can handle him all right.
I don't know. I think we ought to send him over to the violent ward.
You better not send me away. You better not.
Oh, now, Bert.
You better not try and send me away. If you do, I'll hurt you all. I'll hurt you all bad.
Orderly. Be quiet, Bert, and go to sleep. 3 o'clock.
I want a drink of water, Andrews. I want a drink of water.
Go to sleep, Bert.
Please, Andrews. Please.
All right, Bert, just a second. Okay, here's your water.
I was awful thirsty.
Here you are.
Thanks, Andrews. Thanks. Now, give me those keys.
No, you don't.
Give them to me. Now, I got the keys. I'm going to get out. I'm going to get out.
At home.
Hello, this is Polly Andrews. I'm Harvey Andrews' wife.
Oh, yes. Hello, Mrs. Andrews.
Is my husband there?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Andrews, but he isn't in. All the orderlies are out in the grounds hunting for Bert Eustace. He escaped last night, you know.
Well, that's just it, operator. Our cottage is at the north end of the grounds. I understand Eustace is violent. I'm here all alone, and, well, I'm frightened.
I don't know what we can do. I'll tell Mr. Andrews to phone you when he gets back here.
Well, all right, thanks.
Not at all. Goodbye, Mrs. Andrews.
Goodbye. Who's that? Who's there?
Hello, Polly.
You! No! No!
Polly Flinders sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes. Her mother came and caught her and whipped her little daughter for spoiling her nice new clothes.
Lamont, I know it's presuming on our acquaintance, but
But I want to thank you and Miss Lane for coming to my office this morning when I phoned.
Not at all, Fred. Glad to be of service.
The fact is, I need your help desperately. You see, Lamont, I'm a psychiatrist, not a criminologist. I don't think it's a case for the police, but I do need help in trying to find this escaped patient.
And the searching party found no trace of Bert Eustace last night, Dr. Fox?
No, Miss Lane. He's still at large. I feel pretty badly about it, too. Bert was showing signs of violence. In fact, he attacked me yesterday. But instead of sending him to the violent ward, I kept him here for observation.
Then you think he's capable of being a killer?
I'm afraid so, Miss Lane. What
kind of a case was this patient, Fred?
Well, not fundamentally a criminal type, but extremely unbalanced emotionally. During his periods of irrationality, he reverted to his childhood and lived in a complete juvenile world.
What do you mean by that?
But he went to bed when it got dark. He ate his cereal faithfully, insisted that I read bedtime stories and nursery rhymes to him.
Bedtime stories and nursery rhymes?
How have you been handling the case?
Trying to find out as much as I can about his background, especially his childhood.
Any luck?
Well, I haven't been able to get much out of Bert himself, but his father has given a pretty good lead.
His father?
Yes. He's a well-to-do but eccentric old man. He used to come to visit his son devotedly every week. Recently, he's been coming less and less.
You think Bert has some sort of a father complex? Perhaps his father's been neglecting him lately?
And... Yes, he's become more and more unbalanced until he reached the breaking point and decided to escape. Yes, something like that, Lamont. Bert is...
Dr. Foster.
Yes, what is it? What's the matter?
Mrs. Andrews. Harvey Andrews' wife was murdered in our cottage last night.
What?
They just found her strangled to death. But the rest of it, doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense?
The killer carried a body upstairs and left it in the fireplace.
This is horrible. This poor woman's body curled up in the fireplace like this.
Very strange resting place.
Yes. Notice one other thing, Fred.
Yes?
Killer took the shoes off the corpse.
But why? Why did he take her shoes off?
Why did he carry her body upstairs and put it in the fireplace? It doesn't make sense.
Contrary, Margot, it does make sense.
What do you mean?
The torture depths of Bert's mind, he acted with a terrible logic.
I don't think I follow you, Lamont.
Neither do I.
You said this man Bert loved bedtime stories and nursery rhymes.
Yes, that's right.
Well, in my opinion, he killed this woman right out of a Mother Goose rhyme.
What?
Listen to this, Margot. Little Polly Flinders sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes.
Lamont, the dead woman's first name was Polly.
Yes, and she sat among the cinders. That would mean the fireplace, Margot.
Yes, and warming her pretty little toes. No wonder the killer took her shoes off.
Precisely. The clues are all in the rhyme. I wonder if it's only the beginning.
What do you mean, Lamont?
I wonder if the killer's going to stop with his first murder, Margot. Because with all the Mother Goose stories there are, death can rhyme many times.
Glad you're here.
Came right out after we got your phone call, Fred. What's wrong?
We haven't been able to locate Harvey Andrews, the husband of the dead woman.
But it's midnight now. You mean you've been looking for him all day?
Yes, Miss Lane, ever since his wife's death. Andrews was out trying to find Bert with the rest of the searching party, and now he's vanished.
A woman is killed and her husband disappears.
Oh, pardon me a moment. Hello?
This is Parks, Dr. Foster. Could you come out to the reception room for a minute?
Yes. Yes, of course, Parks. Lamont, Miss Lane, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I'm going out to the reception room. Maybe the searching party has come in.
Yes, of course.
Lamont, do you suppose Bert has killed the orderly as well as his wife?
I don't know, Margot. Strange I haven't been able to locate him yet.
Oh, it's Dr. Foster's phone, Lamont.
Yeah. I suppose I'd better answer it. Hello?
Listen, Doctor. Little boy blue, come blow your horn. The sheep's in the meadow, the cow's in the corn. Where's the little boy who looks after the sheep? He's under the haystack, fast asleep.
Who is this? Who is this? Hello? Hello?
What's the matter, Lamont? What was that?
Bert Eustace, Margot. Come on, I think we better get outside fast.
Where are we going?
To the farm and back to the sanitarium.
Who do you expect to find out there?
Wouldn't be surprised, Margot, if we found Little Boy Blue.
You don't think you should be wandering around the grounds in the middle of the night without Dr. Foster?
Dr. Foster will be very glad we left without him, Margot. Hold the flashlight up.
Right.
Isn't that a haystack next to the barn?
Yes, Lamont.
Come on, Margot, but careful. We may be walking into a trap. Here we are. Oh, here's a pitchfork. I'm going to start digging.
Lamont, what do you expect to find? The
killer's given us a clue, Margot. If I'm not wrong... Good Lord.
There's a body under this head. It's Andrews, and he's wearing a blue orderly's jacket.
Yes, Margot. Little Boy Blue.
Only this Little Boy Blue isn't just fast asleep. He's dead. He's... Lamont, listen.
Listening to KZSU, Stamford.
After you found the body, Lamont?
Yes, we ran after him, but lost him in the darkness, Fred.
First it was Little Polly Flinders, then it was Little Boy Blue. I wonder who Bert will pick next.
I can guess his next victim, Miss Lane.
Who?
Myself.
You?
I'm afraid of the same thing, Fred.
Bert hated me as much as he hated Andrews. As I see it, he went to Andrews' house to kill him and found Andrews wasn't there and killed his wife instead.
And he caught Andrews in the grounds later and killed him and buried him under the haystack.
Yes, and logically... Well, I come next.
Could be right, Fred.
I'm afraid I am. Oh, we've got to find this man. We've got to.
The police have a statewide dragnet out for him now.
Yes, they're so busy covering the highways and terminals. I wonder if they haven't given the most logical place a very fast examination.
The most logical place?
Yes, Bert's home. I think we'd better have a talk with Bert's father, Lamont. I wouldn't be surprised if he knew a great deal more about where his son was hiding.
It's a good idea. Come on, Margo.
I'll get my things.
Well, that won't be necessary. Well,
what do you mean?
You're not going with us, Fred. It's not safe.
Oh, but
you admitted yourself you're probably next on Bert's list.
Yes, but...
You're the psychiatrist. I'm the criminologist, remember? We'll phone you here at the office as soon as we've seen old man Eustace.
Well, all right. Thanks, Lamont.
Forget it. Come on, Margo.
Thank you.
to Dr. Foster's suggestion, we decided to come here to see you.
I see.
I know you're as anxious to find Bert as we are, Mr. Eustace.
Yes, I am, ma'am.
Then, if we could just step inside for a moment, Mr. Eustace, and talk to you.
All right. All right, step inside.
Thank you.
Follow me into the parlor. This way.
Monty really is an eccentric.
Did you ever see anything like this old mausoleum?
No, and I don't think anybody else has for the last 50 years.
Here we are. It's a little dusty. I haven't used the parlor for some time. Sit down.
Thank you. You live here all alone, Mr. Eustace?
Yes. Yes, I do. Lived here all alone ever since Bertram went away. I miss him very much.
And before that, Mr. Eustace?
Before that, it was just Bertram and I. Bertram's mother has been dead almost 40 years.
I see. You know, of course, that Bert left the hospital.
Yes. Yes, I know.
You read it in the papers, I suppose?
No, I didn't read it in the papers. But I know it, though. I know it.
You couldn't by any chance tell us where Bert is now, could you, Mr. Eustace?
I don't know, Mr. Cranston. I don't know.
What's that?
What was that noise?
Must have been the cat. She must have knocked something over upstairs.
Those are hardly the footsteps of a cat, Mr. Eustace.
Well, they aren't, are they? Must be someone else in the house.
I think there is.
Then I better find out who.
Come back
is.
Here, Mr. Eustace! Mr. Eustace!
Quick, Lamont! He's locking the door!
Mr. Eustace!
Oh, he's bolted it.
Certainly has, Margot. We're locked in.
It looks as though we were too slow.
Yes, while we're breaking out of the parlor down there, both Mr. Eustace and Bert have disappeared. Come on, Margot, we've got to make sure. We'll go down this corridor. Stay close to me.
Don't worry, Lamont. Oh!
What's the matter, darling?
I just ran into another of those darn spider webs.
Spider web won't hurt you.
Maybe not, but there was a spider in the middle of this one. No wonder Bert was unbalanced living in this old mansion.
Yes, with a queer old duck like Eustace for a father. It's certainly... Margot, listen.
It's Bert. He's upstairs in the floor above us.
Come on, Margot, down the end of this corridor here. Must be a flight of stairs there.
Here are the stairs. Come on. He's up there. Top of the stairs.
Goosey, gander.
Listen.
Where shall I wander? Upstairs and downstairs. And in my lady's chamber. There I met a man who would not say his prayers. I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Oh, Maud, it must be Mr. Eustace, the poor old man.
Wait a second till I have a look.
Here's the flash.
Maybe the old boy is...
What's the matter?
Margot, this isn't Mr. Eustace.
It isn't.
No. It's Bert.
But Lamont, old Mr. Eustace couldn't have just vanished into thin air.
Looks as if he did, Margot. We certainly went over every inch of the house.
You really think we can pick up his trail at Dr. Foster's house?
That's the most logical place to look for him now. Well, that's Fred's place up ahead. Mm. There we are. That's you, darling.
Thanks.
Now, if we can just...
What's the matter?
Well, I saw something in the car headlights.
What?
Figure of a man back there behind the garage. Looked like old man Eustace.
Oh, Margot.
Margot, I'm going around back. You go into Fred's house. Tell him I was delayed.
Careful, darling, please. That old man is a crazy killer.
Shadow's going to set a trap, Margot. This time, I think the crazy killer has spoken his last nursery rhyme.
I'm so glad you saw this, Lane. The killer has been here.
You've seen him?
Yes. I saw the same figure Lamont saw when I stopped to pick up the mail.
Old Mr. Eustace.
Yes, and he left this in the mailbox.
What is it?
A note. Listen. Dr. Foster went to Gloucester in a shower of rain. He stepped in a puddle up to his middle and never went there again.
Then old Mr. Eustace is here. Lamont did see him.
He must have. It must mean that crazy killer is going to creep into this house and murder me in the night. He's out of his mind. None of us is safe anymore. We're all... Why, this is strange.
What is it?
The killer really is close. Here's another note. Here on my desk. Eustace must have slipped in through the window and left.
Another note?
Yes. And the odd part about it is, it's addressed to you.
To me?
Yes. Read it.
Seesaw, Marjorie Daw. Jackie shall have a new master. He shall have but a penny a day, because he can't work any faster. I don't understand.
Marjorie Daw. It's almost like Margot.
You mean the killer?
I'm afraid he means you, Miss Lane. Margot. Marjorie. Very close, aren't they? Close enough for all practical purposes.
Dr. Foster, why are you looking at me like that?
It's a nice rhyme, isn't it? It has a swing to it. Seesaw, Marjorie Daw. Jackie shall have a new master. He shall have but a penny a day because he can't work any faster.
You're the nursery rhyme killer.
Yes, Miss Lane, I am. I love nursery rhymes. Old Mother Hubbard went to a cupboard to get a poor dog a bone.
Stay away from me.
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating his Christmas pie.
Stay away.
Jack and Jill went up the hill.
Lane.
Peter, Pumpkin Eater.
No!
These tall Marjorie.
What's that?
Who's in this room? I don't see anyone. Someone I can't see. Who are you?
You like to hear a little nursery rhyme, Dr. Foster?
Who are you?
I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. What can be the use of him is more than I can see.
Stop!
Very, very like me from the heels up to the head. And I see him jump before me when I jump into my bed.
Stop it! I'm going mad!
You're mad already, Foster. Your mind has been clouded by the dark shadows you profess to study.
Who are you?
The shadow, Foster. Shadow here to see justice done.
Shadow?
You thought you could blame these murders on Bert and then on his father. You became so obsessed with his case that your own mind broke under the strain.
Let me out of here. I've got to get out of here.
No, Foster. The state has a place for you. A place where never again will you be allowed loose among society. A place where you can safely recite nursery rhymes to your heart's content.
Well, that's the whole story, Margot. Foster wasn't a doctor at all. He was just a clever quack who outsmarted himself.
He became so obsessed with abnormal cases such as Bert Eustace that he became unbalanced himself. Is that it?
That's right, Margot. Bert's escape must have been the snapping point for Foster's mind. He went on a rampage, blaming everything on Bert. And when we went to see old man Eustace, Foster was afraid we'd find Bert, get the truth out of him. So he had to get rid of Bert and then shift the blame to the father.
Then Foster was the one Paulie Andrews saw, and it's his voice we heard on the phone. Both Bert and his father were completely innocent?
That's right, Margaret.
I still don't see why he called you in on the case when he was guilty, Lamar.
Well, that's how he outsmarted himself. He didn't want to risk calling in the authorities, but he did need an outsider to verify his alibis and collaborate his statements. I'm a criminologist. We've met before, and it seemed like the logical choice.
Mm, I see. Well, after that case, there's one thing I'm sure of.
Oh, what's that, Margaret?
If I ever have to read to a child again, it's going to be from the Encyclopedia Britannica.
For more.
Where am I? In the village. What do you want? Information. Whose side are you on? That would be telling. We want information. 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 You won't get it. By hook or by crook, we will. Who is number one?
KZSU, Stanford.
Oh, Count, after that shadow episode, I never want to hear another nursery rhyme as long as I live.
What a beautiful double entendre.
Oh,
for another several thousand years, I trust.
Oh, I should hope so.
That was just, oh, scary!
I tell you, that shadow's some kind of a guy, though, isn't he?
Oh, he's my type of guy.
Yeah,
negative. Oh, jeezy weezy. Oh, bless my heart. Oh, I'm getting worse and worse.
Oh,
the devil to it.
Oh,
goodness. Well, of course, you're listening to Mystery Playhouse.
On KZSU 90.1.
Stanford. However, we've got something even more scarier than the shadow.
Wait, I'm so frightened.
Yeah, wouldn't you be? In this Hollywood season, what would be better than the further adventures of Nick Danger? Coming up right now. Whoa!
Oh.
Los Angeles, he walks again by night. Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly, ruthlessly, doggedly, toward his weekly meeting with the unknown. At 4th and Drucker, he turns left. At Drucker and 4th, he turns right. He crosses MacArthur Park and walks into a great sandstone building. Groping for the door, he steps inside. Climbs the 13 steps to his office. He walks in. He's ready for mystery. He's ready for excitement. He's ready for anything. He's...
Nick Danger, Third Eye.
Feature to go and no anchovies?
No anchovies? You've got the wrong man. I spell my name, Danger.
What?
The makers of fantastic cigarettes, long in the leaf and short in the can, bring you another true story from the tattered casebook of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Let's join him now in the adventure we call...
Let's get down to business. Uncross those beautiful stems of yours, baby. Here's the case I call number 666. It all began innocently enough on Tuesday. I was sitting in my office on that drizzly afternoon, listening to the monotonous staccato of rain on my desktop and reading my name on the glass of my office door. Regnard Kisten. My secretary lay snoring on the floor, her long, beautiful gams pinioned under the couch. I didn't hear him enter, but my nostrils flared at the smell of his perfume. Pyramid patchouli. There was only one joker in L.A. sensitive enough to wear that scent, and I had to find out who he was.
Good afternoon, Mr. Danger. I'm Rocky, your corporal.
Thanks, Half Pint. You just saved me a lot of investigative work.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Do you know what this is?
I had to think for a minute. What cruel game was he playing? That's a brown paper bag.
That's correct. Now, look inside, Mr. Danger. What do you see?
That's easy. That's a pickle.
Very good. Now, I think you're ready for this.
Why, that's nothing but a two-bit ring from a crackerback jocks.
I'll sell it to you for $5,000.
What kind of a chump do you take me for? That tarnished piece of tin is worthless.
Worthless? Not to Melanie Haber.
Melanie Haber?
You may remember her as Audrey Farber.
Audrey Farber?
Susan Underhill?
Susan Underhill?
How about Betty Jo Bialowski?
Betty Jo Bialowski. I hadn't heard that name since college. Everyone knew her as Nancy. Then it all came rushing back to me like the hot kiss at the end of a wet fist. It was pig night at the Omani Padme Sigma house.
We escaped from the crowd and stood.
Oh, Nikki, I don't know what to say. This is the most beautiful ring I've ever seen.
Yeah, Nancy, it's really neat. It cost me $5,000.
Oh, Nikki, how can I ever repay you?
Well, she will, Nancy. How about 500 down and a 36 contract?
What?
Well, you could marry me.
That's impossible, Nick. I can't marry you. I can't even tell you why. Maybe someday.
All right, Nancy. I understand. Sign here.
Oh, Nick. I'll never forgive you.
And I'll never forget you neither, Nancy.
And that's why I called you today, Nancy. I mean, Mrs. Haber. Something reminded me of that time so long ago under the dwarf maples.
I don't know what prompted you to get in touch with me, but you called just in the nick of time.
You haven't lost your delicate sense of humor, have you, Nancy?
What? Nick, I can't talk to you now. You have to get out here right away.
Nancy! I slipped the ring into my nose and the receiver into my pocket and headed for the door quickly. But I'd forgotten the little man with the evil grin.
Just a second, Danger. What about my pickle?
You're lucky you still have your brown paper bag, small change.
Danger! You haven't seen the last of me!
No, but the first of you turns my stomach!
You'll be hearing from me again, Danger!
I headed down the hall in the opposite direction toward the fire escape. I hadn't a moment to lose.
Hey, Danger. Where's the fire?
In your eyes, Lieutenant Bradshaw.
Don't get wise with me, Peeper. You're lucky we didn't burn you on the Anselmo Pederasty case.
Look, you caught him, didn't you?
Yeah. Punk got away, no thanks to you.
Well, what brings your flat feet sniffing around here now, copper?
Just a friendly word of advice, Danger.
Yeah, what?
Don't go sticking your big nose in the police business.
Sure, Lieutenant. Is that all?
No. Don't talk with your mouth full.
Okay, Bradshaw.
Don't fidget while I talk to you.
Sure,
it's
Lieutenant.
The fucking mother pumped my knife.
Okay. When I hit the street, the rain had already turned L.A. into a mud river. It was a short swim down Alvarado to my convertible. I had to get to Santa Barbara in a big hurry. As I whipped onto Mulholland Drive, the lights were just twinkling on across the San Fernandino Valley. I could barely make them out through the driving rain. Then a hard ride down Big Tujunga Canyon. My car squealed as I hit Sepulveda. A right, a left, another right. A left of the body, a right, and into a gas station.
Hey, Pop! All right, hold your horses, I'm coming.
Hey, yeah.
Where am I?
You can't get there from here. Oh, you must mean the old same place, sonny. It's right out back. Here's the key.
4 hours later, I parked my car in the carriage house and walked up the gray gravel driveway between the landing of the earth maples toward the pillared entrance of the same mansion. It had been snowing in Santa Barbara ever since the top of the cage, and I had to shake the cornstarch off my mud nuts as I looked at the heavy obsidian doorknocker. Hey in there! Open up, your doorknocker fell off!
What's all this brouhaha?
Brouhaha? Wait a minute. Don't you want this door knocker?
I already have one.
But this is yours.
You see? I told you. We used to have another one, but he vanished mysteriously. All right, come in out of the cornstarch and dry your mucklucks by the fire. Let me introduce myself. I am Nick Danger.
No, let me introduce myself. I am Nick Danger.
If you're so smart, why don't you pick up your cues faster?
Are those my cues?
Yes, and they must be dry by now. Why don't you pull them up out of the cellophane before they scorch? All right, sir. May I take your hat and coat?
Yes.
I assume you've come to see my mistress, Mr. Danger.
I don't care about your private life or what his name is. I've come to see Nancy... Mrs. Haber.
Mrs. Haber?
Audrey Farber.
Audrey Farber?
How about Betty Jo Bialowski?
Oh, you mean Nancy. Well, she's in the aviary studying trees. I shall return with her straight away. You may wait here in the sitting room, or you can sit here in the waiting room.
There was something fishy about the butler. I think he was a Pisces, probably working for scale. I felt a thin shiver run up my spine as I sat down on the cold marble floor. What was it about this place? The atmosphere was as phony as the Tudor balustrade that leered at me from the top of the staircase. And there she stood, radiant. All those curves showing through that flimsy burnous. It was Nancy running down the stairs. All the familiar sounds and smells of pig night came rushing back like a good snort of scotch. Then it struck me. 20 years later, and she still knocked me out. Ugh.
Nick,
where
darling,
am I?
Nick, oh, Nick, wake up. Are you all right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, then stop slapping me.
Nancy. What's the bird's eye lowdown on this caper? Whatever that means.
Nick, we can't talk here.
We
can't talk here.
What do you mean we can't talk?
We can't talk.
Oh, you're right, we can't. What do we do?
Follow me! This one! This is much better. We're in the chapel now. It's soundproofed, so no one can hear us. I said no one can... Oh, never mind. Follow me. Here, take my hand. This way. Oh.
Yeah, pretty fancy layout you've got here, Nancy. What's this, your boudoir? Putting on a dog, eh? Well, say, where are all the doggies?
Mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, Miss Thompson. Along with the servants. They were very attached to one another.
Where? Wait a minute. You said all the servants had disappeared. What about your butler?
You mean Cavalry?
Yes, madam.
Oh.
I'm sorry, madam.
What are you doing there on all fours?
I'm looking for my script. Why don't you just go on without me?
Listen, Nancy, I smell a rat.
So do I. I think he's got my script.
Oh, this is awful.
Cavalry, look for it, all right?
All right, madam. Mousy.
All right. Oh. This is the portrait gallery. This is the portrait.
There's a here. This is the portrait gallery, Nick. It's the safest room in the mansion. Mm. No one can find us here.
All right, Nancy. Get your hands off me. What's the scoop?
Chocolate, butterscotch, or Rocky Rococo?
That reminded me. How had she gotten herself involved with that slimy weasel Rococo? And how do I make my voice do this?
It all began 20 years ago with the mysterious disappearance of my husband.
You mean you were already married when I sold you that ring?
No wonder she hadn't been able to meet the payments.
What?
So that was your secret. Oh, what a sap I've been.
Oh, yes. But that night, the strange thing happened.
That usually goes along with being just married. Let me handle this, Nancy. Far out, Catherwood. Just roll a couple of bombers and leave them on the side table.
Yes, madam. Pardon me, madam. I seem to have crashed. It's been such a long exposition, you know. I'm so tired.
Catherwood.
Yes, sir.
Catherwood, can't you see you're upsetting Nancy? Leave us alone.
Well, how much would you like, sir? 500? 1,000?
Am Scray Osterbay.
Oh, of course, sir. Oku kachoop, sir.
Gesundheit.
Yes. I'm so tired I haven't slept.
All right, Nancy, go on with your story. Start with your dreadful secret. Why don't you just hold your thumb next to your line? See, like this. Look, this way I don't get confused and I never lose my place.
I feel faint. The whole world is spinning.
Why, that's lucky for us, Nancy. If it were flat, all the Chinese would fall off. Why, she's no fun. She fell right over. Wait a minute. Didn't I say that line on the other side of the record? Where am I? I'd better check.
Who is now?
It's okay. They're speaking Chinese. Poor Nancy, she's fainted. I'll just wrap her skirt around her head like this to keep her warm. Now I'll press her body close to mine to keep me warm.
She looked so helpless there, spread-eagled on the floor. I beat the eagle off and gave her a quick mouth-to-mouth resuscitation job. And then it struck me.
What a sap she had.
Good girl, Nancy. That'll hold him for a while.
Oh, poor Nicky. He's bleeding. I'll tear this strip off my petticoat. There. You tie him up with this. I'll go through his pockets.
Oh,
that contract must be on him somewhere.
Audrey.
Your viewers. Gary
Can't you find a contract yet? Your time is almost up.
You slimy blackmailer. How did you get in here? You don't have a key.
No, only half a key. I had to split it with a sound effects man.
Right,
where is the contract, you absent-minded old frog?
Wait a minute. Here it is. I found it. It was taped to his leg.
Give me that. Ha-ha!
Oh.
I've got it at last.
All right. Now maybe we'll leave it in peace, Rococo. Give me the negative.
Of course. Here it is.
Now we're out of your evil clutches.
Dan, wait a minute. Look at this negative. It isn't us. It's an interesting approach, but it isn't us.
He's right. What are you trying to pull on me, Rococo?
Oh, my goodness. I must have sent the wrong negative to the police. I must have left yours in the car. I'll go get it. Are you threatening me? Why, you stupid toad! I ought to beat your brain out!
No! Put down that pickle!
You'll never get away with this, Rococo!
Oh, yeah? Didn't you ever see Casablanca?
The half a key Largo? Lifted enough for me to eyeball the situation. Rococo, that sleazy weasel, how did he get in here? And what was he doing with that pickle in one hand and my contract in the other? I had no choice. Nancy and the old butler were frozen with terror. I struggled quietly to my feet and flung myself head first at Rococo's stomach.
Thank you. You saved our life.
This ain't no time for ticker tape parades, baby. Get me out of these ropes and into a good belt of scotch. I'll keep that contract, Catherwood. But you can take this pickle off my hands.
No, I think you better hold on to that, Nick.
Good thinking, sweetheart. Lieutenant Bradshaw will need all the evidence he can get.
Yes.
You should stick around too, Danger. You can help him put all the pieces together, you know.
Right.
No. A left.
Oh! I felt like I was being kicked in the head by the whole chorus line at Minsky's. So Nancy was in on this caper. I felt myself going under. The biggest long shot, Louis at Hialeah, wouldn't put a fin on my fate now. This time, something told me I was out for lunch. I even began to hear things.
Keep your nose out of police business, Danger!
We'll be back to Nick Danger after this message.
All right, hold it right where you are. I'm Lieutenant Bradshaw with a piece of advice for you. Now, here in the studio, it's all knuckles and know-how. But when that red light goes off, I'm just plain Harry Ames, citizen and weekend father. Now, take a tip from a cop who does. Radio work can be just as dirty and exciting as hunting down public enemy number one. So when I get home, my old lady knows what I need and how. A warm, heaping bowl full of Loosener's castor oil flakes with real glycerin vibraphone. It doesn't just wash your mouth out. It cleans the whole system right on down the line. So come on, you little rookies. Tell your mom to get on it and do it every day. Just remember what the guys down at the precinct house sing.
Oh, it ain't no use if you ain't got the boost you get from Loosener's. Loosener's.
The all-weather breakfast. And now we return you to Act 3 of Nick Danger, Third Eye.
When the crazy escalator ride ended, I fought my way back up to the land of the living. I came to slumped over in the front seat of my own car, lying in a pool of cheap rot gut. I had a head full of ideas that were driving me insane and a mouthful of cotton candy.
Want some more cotton candy, Danger? It might sober you up.
Oh, my head. Bradshaw, baby. I never thought I'd be happy to see your ugly mug.
Save the wisecracks for the warden, Danger. I got you this time and I got you good.
What are you talking about?
Get out of that car.
Hey, come on. If you can stand up and keep your hands high, I got you covered. Hey, what's this all about, Bradshaw? You know I never carry a rod.
Yeah, but it's murder what some people can do with a car, and I got witnesses to prove it.
There's the man! Keep me away from him! He died!
Take it easy, lady. I don't know why you're doing this, Nancy, but it doesn't change my feelings about you.
Oh, Nick, you're such a tool! He did!
All right. Take it easy, little lady. All right, now let's get these facts straight. Take this down, Henderson. Okay, Professor, how did it happen?
Well, Sergeant...
Lieutenant.
Yes, Mrs. Farber and I were sitting right here in the living room engaged in a friendly round of spin the pickle, weren't we, dear? Yes, with our good friend Mr. Rococo.
Yes,
and then suddenly the door flew open and this drunken madman right here drove in, honking wildly and headed straight for us.
He's lying, Bradshaw! Can it, Danger?
Yes, at the last possible moment, he stopped on a dime.
I see.
Unfortunately, the dime was in Mr. Rococo's pocket.
I'm going to break your neck.
Have a murder.
I've heard enough. We'll get the rest of the story down at the station house.
Right, sir.
This for years. Week in and week out, Danger, playing second fiddle while you got all the girls. Well, I'm tired of being Mr. Nice Guy. See, there's going to be some changes made. Next week, this show is going to be called...
Sergeant Bradshaw!
Lieutenant.
District Attorney!
I'm going to have my own theme music, and it's all going to take place in Washington, D.C. No plots, just girls and guys doing nice, simple things up against Nazis and fifth columnists and no Jewish writers either. I'll get my name in the papers, my picture taken along with Colonel Lindbergh and Charles Foster Kane and Captain Chandler and Lou... All right, hold it, everybody. Catherwood, stop it. I've got Bradshaw's rod pressed against Nancy's temple. Now you spill the beans or I'll blow her brain out.
Nick.
I think you're bluffing, Blackfoot. No, you weren't bluffing.
All right, talk.
It all began 20 years ago. I was a freshman in college then, although you wouldn't hardly believe it to look at me now. I had just completed work on my science project. I invited Nancy down. Well, this is it, Nancy. How do you like it?
Where you've been every night since we got
here.
Sure
is.
Oh, Nicky, I thought you were...
Danny, but don't say it, Nancy. I know it's been hard, but I wanted to give you the swellest honeymoon a girl had ever had. We're going to Greece.
And swim the English Channel?
No. To ancient Greece, where burning Sappho loved and sang and stroked the wine-dark sea in the temple by the moonlight wa-da-doo-da. Don't you see, Nancy? I've built the perfect time machine.
Oh, it sounds dangerous.
Yes, that's why I'm going to try it out first. Now, when I get into this grandfather clock, you hit me over the head with this bottle of champagne right here, set the dial for 1,000 and put in 3 dimes. I'll be gone for 1,000 years.
1,000? Oh, that's longer than anyone's ever been gone before.
But to you it will seem only like a minute. Very well, my love. Now, forward into the past!
Who's there?
Mrs. Haber?
Who's that?
I'm Rocky Rococo. You may have seen me loitering around the drugstore drinking chocolate malted falcons and giving away free high schools. I'm here for a friend, Mrs. Haver. If you sign a contract, you're supposed to keep up the payments.
Oh, you must be your friend, isn't it?
Yes.
I couldn't find this money already. You only gave me the ring last night. I'm wearing it, see?
Yes, that's a very pretty hand you have there.
Nancy, it's a success. I'm back. It's a success. I have proof. I've been to ancient Greece. Look at this grape.
Oh, you old man. What have you done with my husband?
What do you mean, Nancy? I am your husband. Well, who's that ugly dwarf with his hand in your mouth, Nancy?
At your service.
All right, Catherwood, I've heard just enough.
What? I'm telling this story, young man. What are you doing in my flashback?
Flashback? What are you talking... Flashback? All right, all of you. You stay right where you are. Put your thumbs on your place and your script while I figure this out.
All right.
So that was her horrible secret. Poor Nancy, married to a man 1,000 years old. Now I understood why the servants had disappeared. It was Catherwood who killed Rococo to protect his wife, my Betty Jo.
Who is he talking to? How does he make his voice do that?
All right, Bradshaw, there's your confession. I hope you got it all down. Bradshaw? Oh, that's right, he's not in his flashback. Skip ahead a bit. No, I can't skip ahead. All right, everybody, into the time machine.
Wait a minute. No. You don't understand how radio works. Now, this is my flashback. All I have to do to return us to the present is fade my voice out like this and cue the organist. And you see, here we are.
Oh, my goodness.
What's happening? Am I seeing double? There's two of everybody except me.
Pneumonia was breaking out all around me. Wait a minute. Who are you? I was here first. You imposter. Take that.
Oh, why, that's terrible! Who are you calling a hussy, you old bag? I can talk to me any way I like to! What? You have a lot of nerve saying I'm going to look like that in 20 years? There ain't room enough in this dress for both of us! Gesundheit!
Yes, it certainly is, Dad. Glad to have someone my own age to talk to after all these years. Well, I've forgotten the key. David? Half-caste woman, living a life apart. Where did your story begin?
Stop it! Stop you fools! Can't you see someone has been crushed here under this car? Oh, my God, it's me! I don't look at all well. I'm dead! I've been killed! Oh, this hasn't happened to me since M!
I give a quick 20-20 on the whole scene. I had thought that I was the only one going insane. But now we were all in this together.
I knew what I had to do.
I didn't like it, but that had never stopped me before. All right, everybody. Take off your...
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this scheduled transmission to bring you an announcement of national importance from the White House in Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow American, this morning at 6:25 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, combined elements of the Imperial Japanese Navy and our forces
ruthlessly attacked our naval base at Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands. I have conferred this morning with the Congress and the Chiefs of Staff in emergency session. We have reached our rendezvous with destiny. It is our unanimous and irrevocable decision that the United States of America unconditionally surrender. And now my wife and I would like to return with you for the thrilling conclusion of Private Nick Danger, Third Eye.
I've solved another one for you.
Danger, I'll never know how you do it. I was sure I had the goods on you this time.
Well, Bradshaw, it's like in the army, you know. The great prince issues commands, founds states, vests families with fiefs. Inferior people should not be employed.
Nick, I can't knock success. But you still put me through too many changes.
Makers of Loosener's Castor Oil Flakes and Fantastic Cigarettes. Loosener's for the smile of beauty, Fantastic's for the smile of success, and brought you the transcribed adventures of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, when Nick Danger meets the Arab.
Welcome again to another exciting edition of In the Movies. I'm Tony Baloney.
And I'm Sandy Dendy.
And Sandy and I have come to a rare agreement this week and deciding to cover a made-for-television saga.
We're talking, of course, about that cable masterpiece, The Council.
Now, as you're all aware, The Council is a drama of a small western town coming into its own as the last holdout in a super-civilized high-tech valley. As the two cable companies squabble over who will service the community, the council ingeniously pits the companies against one another in a clever plan to stall development of the town altogether.
Unfortunately, the corporations become suspicious of the plan after the debate rages on for 3 years in the council, and the bitter feuders threaten to join hands in a common cause that would benefit both companies but leave the town serviced.
But the council has a surprise ending, and one that most audiences will not be able to anticipate. Now, other than a good script, the council also contains good actors. The most noticeable, of course, being Marlon Brando. Now, in a trend set by perhaps Victor Victrola, Liquid Sky, and Tootsie, Brando plays a woman. In this instance, you can hear maybe a little tinge of the Apocalypse Now persona, or ambience, whatever you will, but you can see the man struggle with himself to break that mold, impersonate someone perhaps more like, Katharine Hepburn or something.
Yes, Brando is a method actor, Tony, and he has to really force himself to truly become, as it were, this lady, truly become the woman, a feat I would imagine to be difficult for any man.
Well, I'll vouch for that. But anyway, he does pull it off, and I think maybe even this performance does, of course, pay for the film in itself. But you disagree with me, Sandy, but that later. Anyway,
right,
here's
later.
Marlon in the scene from The Council.
Okay.
Thank you. Just wanted to be sure that, that there was a market there for those shares. One last question, which is really for Mr. Sunil, maybe. We've been talking about the possibility of Viacom buying the mountain. No, what was it? Well, anyway, it was the opposite of what I had in mind, was the possibility, does it exist, wouldn't it, for a company like Viacom to buy out the City Cable Partners.
Now, I have to admit, Sandy, even with the wig and all the makeup, I just see Brando there with that damp sponge. You know, and sweating. That Apocalypse Now scene just comes all back to me all too easily. Although Sandy agrees that the performances are good, she, however, feels that the film isn't quite up to par. I, however, love this film, and I think not only does the performance radiate the cost of the simple $4, $4.50 admission.
In some places $5.
Yeah, in some places yes. $5. But also the script, I think, truly justifies all the public going and seeing this great saga. Besides Brando, this has another star, Tony Randall, who in this case pretends to be the counsel against the corporations also. And here he has well, it's just totally believable. I mean, I get bored just thinking about him, just like a real board meeting. And I think he starts off this scene with the delicious you know, that you hear all too commonly in real counsel situations.
First, Mr. Snell, in your experience, has that been a common occurrence? And if so, what have we in the agreement that protects us, or what can we do to protect ourselves against having to have another hearing on this 6 months from now?
Well, like I said, I just love that he sticks in there. And also the symbolism by calling the corporations Mr. Snell. Now,
yes,
if that's not a nice double entendre, I don't know what is.
Well, Randall's performance, I don't know, wasn't inspired. Like, you could call it anything but inspired.
Well, how many council meetings do you go to that are, in fact, inspired?
Well, was it Stanislavski that said, realism is one thing, but inspired realism, the great moments are what should be on stage, not boring realism,
as
we find in real council meetings.
I knew you were
going to
get
Tony.
That in
yes.
there. I knew you were going to slip that on in
Thanks
there.
For letting
However,
me.
However, we do have an instance in which we are reminded it is a film, and where we enter the actual psyche of the actor. This, of course, is a De Palma cliche, or trademark, if you will, of all his films. We see the split screen. I'm talking, of course, the part in which Danny O, he's playing the part of the corporate man that is talking about once the city does convert over to the cable, and he is thinking to himself how he can break the filibuster. Now, this is another one of those nice little subtleties, because, of course, he's filibustering the whole time he is thinking about how to break the filibustering. So here's that scene where he's talking to himself, and we hear him talking out loud, but also hear him talking to the council.
I want my disappointments and my frustrations early if we're going to have them. I don't want them later on. I want to know up front if we're going to have difficulty of any kind. So that's the concept that I am asking, that we find the proper way to incorporate in this agreement when it's, I think, appropriate to ask staff and ask the two applicants, first asking staff, am I correct?
What a delightful scene. Absolutely delightful.
Delightful is one word for it, Tony. I like the opposing sides of the man struggling with himself, as it were. However, I think it is a direct plagiarism on the great feminist director out of New York City, Sushi Feinstein's film, I Am Woman, Am I Woman, Who Am I, which I must say is a beautiful film, a beautiful kind of portrayal of a struggle of an inner self.
You have a special bias for any film made by a woman. And
Tony, I don't think that's fair.
I'm ERA all the way.
All the way,
just
Tony.
As far as films go, women just don't have it and men do. But
Tony, what?
Film in a whole, I think, deserves a decent 9 and maybe going on 10.
Tony, I'll have to really differ with you on this film. I would give this film at best a 1 and a 1 and a 4.
Well,
change that to a 1, Tony. I don't like this film. I love Brando, a beautiful actor. I've lusted after him many times in the past. However, since the weight thing, and also I just don't see him as a woman. I can't lust after Brando when he's a woman.
Nice difference of opinion, but nevertheless, this whole film portrays of a bloated bureaucracy is worthy of the admission itself.
Yes, the uninspired
realism. Yeah, it's worth just seeing for that if you've never been to a real council meeting. But until next week...
Why not go to a real council meeting?
Right. Until next week, in the movies, I'm Tony Baloney.
And I'm Sandy Dandy.
Reminding you to stay the bottoms of those seats for gum only.
Oh, those two, they're so scary. Can you imagine what it must be like being...
I got scared just listening to those two.
And what did you think about the adventures of Nick Danger?
Oh, no, that's one guy I like a lot. I think he's really on the ball.
Oh, really? Hey, he's so scary.
Oh, my.
But if you think that's scary, Vampirella, should see what we have on next.
Oh, I'm frightened to ask, Count. Why don't you tell me and the people out there?
Oh, it's the Good Show.
Oh, the Goody Show.
Very scary. This is from way back when with Peter Sellers and the whole gang. So please stay tuned. This will be our last feature here on Mystery Playhouse as well. So do go away,
but
only afterwards. Oh, don't worry. Next week at 12 o'clock, it's Mystery Playhouse 2. From 12 to 2, Mystery Playhouse 90.1. But that's next week. Here now, Goon Show.
PC Home Service. Thank you. We now come to the radio show entirely dedicated to the downfall of John Snack. He, of course, refers to the highly esteemed Goon Show.
Later. But now to business. Mr. Greenslade, come over here.
Yes, Master?
Tell the waiting world what we have for them. My lords, ladies, and other national assistance holders. Tonight, the League of Burmese Trombonists present a bestseller play entitled The Terror of Bexhill-on-Sea, or The Dreaded Batter Pudding Hurler. The English Channel, 1941. Across the silent strip of green-gray water, in England, coastal towns were deserted, except for people. Despite the threat of invasion and the stringent blackout rules, elderly gentlefolk of Bexhill-on-Sea still took their evening constitution.
Quite windy on these cliffs, Minnie.
Yes, yes. What a nice summer evening. A typical English evening.
Yes, the rain is lovely and warm. Minnie?
Yes?
I think I'll take one of my sou'westers off.
You devil, you.
Here. Minnie, hold my elephant gun.
Oh, dear. I don't know what you brought it for. You can't shoot elephants in England, you know.
Why not?
They're out of season.
Oh. Does this mean we shall have to have pelican for dinner again?
I fear so. Oh. I fear so.
Then I'll risk it. I'll shoot an elephant out of season.
You can't shoot an elephant out of season. Elephants mustn't be.
Listeners who are listening will, of course, realize that Minnie and Henry are talking rubbish. As erudite people will realize, There are no elephants in Sussex. They're only found in Kent. North of a line drawn between two points, thus making it the shortest distance. Thank you.
Well, if that's how it is, I can't shoot any. Come, Henry. We'd better be getting home. I don't want to be caught on the beaches if there's an invasion.
Neither do I, Minnie. I'm wearing a dirty shirt and I don't... Minnie?
Yes. What?
Minnie, did you hear a gas oven door slam just then?
Don't be silly, Henry. I would be walking around these cliffs with a gas oven.
Lady Docker?
Yes, but apart from the obvious ones, who'd want to...
No, I've never heard of him.
Help, Henry. I've been struck down from behind, buddy. Help.
No. Oh, dear. Poor Minnie.
Help.
Please. English police, law guardians.
Not too loud, Henry. They'll hear you.
Police of the law.
Can I help you, sir?
Are you a policeman?
No, I'm a constable.
Oh. What is the difference?
They're spelt differently.
Help me, differently spelled constable.
Oh. What's happened to this dear old silver-bearded lady?
She was struck down from behind.
And not a moment too soon. Congratulations, sir.
I didn't do it.
Coward, hand back your OBE. Now, tell me, who did this felonious deed? What's happened to her?
It is much too dark to see. Yes. Strike a light.
Not allowed in blackout.
Strike a dark light.
No, madam. Madam, we daren't. Why, only 28 miles across the channel, the Germans are watching this coast.
Don't you be a silly pilly policeman.
Bravo, Henry. Bitter poo.
They can't see a little match being struck?
Oh, all right. Any questions?
Yes, where are my legs?
Where am I?
Now are you aware of the danger from German long-range guns?
I have it. I've got it. I've got the answer. Just by chance, I happen to have on me a box of German matches.
Wonderful! Strike one. They won't dare fire at their own matches.
Of course not. Now. Yes! The British!
The British!
We tried using a candle, but it wasn't very bright, and we daren't light it. So we waited for dawn. And there, in the light of the morning sun, we saw what had struck Miss Bannister. It was a batter pudding.
It's still warm, Minnie.
Ah. Thank heaven. I hate cold batter pudding.
Come, dear little Minnie. I'll take you home with me, Minnie. I'll give you a hot bath. Rub you down with the anti-vapor rub, put a plaster on your back, give your little feet a mustard bath, and then put you to bed.
Do you know this woman?
Devil!
devilish man.
Naughty man.
Naughty, naughty, horrible, naughty man. Of course I do. This is Minnie Bannister, the world-famous poker player. Give her a good poker and she'll play any tune you like.
Well, get her off this cliff. It's dangerous. Meantime, I must report this to the inspector. I'll call on you later. Goodbye. As I swam ashore, I dried myself to save time. That night, I lay awake in my air-conditioned dustbin, thinking. Now, who on earth would want to strike another with a bap of pudding? Obviously, it wouldn't happen again. So I fell asleep. Nothing much happened that night, except that I was struck with a vat of pudding.
It's all rather confusing, really.
In the months to come, 38 batter puddings were hurled at Miss Bannister. A madman was at large. Scotland Yard was called in.
Inspector Seagull?
Yes?
My name is Hercules Gritpipe Finn, Special Investigation. Miss Batter Pudding Hurler.
Yes?
He's made a fool of the police.
I disagree. We were fools long before he came along.
You silly, twisted boy. Nevertheless, he's got to be stopped. Now, Seagun.
Yes, 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 yes.
Please, don't do that. Now, these batter puddings. They were obviously thrown by hand.
Not necessarily. Some people are pretty clever with their feet.
For instance?
Tom Cringingnut.
Who's he?
He's a man who's pretty clever with his feet.
What's his name?
Jim Flatcroc.
Sergeant Throat?
Yes.
Make a note of that.
Right, but anything else? Sir?
Yes.
Right.
Now, Seagun, these batter puddings, were they all identical?
All except the last one. Inside it, we found this.
What? An army boot? So the dreaded hurler is a military man. Any troops in the town?
The 56th Heavy Underwater Artillery.
Get there at once. Arrest the first soldier you see wearing one boot.
Ying Tong, it'll I po.
Right, off you go.
How dare you come here to my HQ with such a ridiculous...
I tell you, Major Bedlock, I must ask you to parade your men.
Why?
I'm looking for a criminal.
You find your own. It took me years to get this lot. I surrender the earth.
Ying Tong, it'll I po.
Very well, then. Bugler Max Galdry, sound fall in the hard way.
Oh,
Lads.
Big flathead.
Lads. My dear, lovely, hairy lads. I'm sorry I had to get you out of bed in the middle of the day, but I'll see you get extra pay for this, I promise you. That's what I like, spirit. Now, Sigurd, which is the man?
I walked along the serried ranks looking for the soldier with one boot, but my luck was out. The entire regiment were barefooted, all save the officers who wore reinforced concrete socks.
I say, Sigurd, it's getting dark. You can't see in this light.
I'll strike a match. Curse, I forgot about the Germans.
We want our birdie boys.
Who are you?
Me? I'm Lance Private Eccles, but most people call me by my nickname.
What's that?
Mick.
That's a joke. One more joke about the Mick.
I inspected the man closely. He was the nearest thing I'd seen to a human being without actually being one.
I say, Sigurd, you... Surely you don't suspect this man? Why, we were together in the same company during that terrible disaster.
What company was that?
Desert Song, 1933.
Were you both in the doily cart?
Right in the doily cart. I don't wish to know that.
AC, AC.
But wait!
At last... By the light of a passing glue factory, I saw that Eccles was only wearing one boot.
Oh, well, I only got one boot.
I know, but why are you wearing it on your head?
Why? Why? It fits, that's why. That silly question to
ask. Let me see that boot. Size 19. What size head have you got?
Size 19.
Curse. The man's defense was perfect.
Oh!
Major Bloodnock?
How dare you call me Major Bloodnock?
That's your name.
In that case, I forgive you.
Who is this man's other boot?
Stolen.
By whom?
A thief.
You sure it wasn't a pickpocket?
Positive. Eccles never keeps his boots in his pocket.
Damn.
Damn.
They all had a watertight... They all had a watertight alibi. But just to make sure, I left it a fish tank overnight. Next morning, my breast pocket phone rang. Hello?
Mr. Seacombe, Minnie's been hit with another batter pudding.
Well, that's nothing new.
It is. This one was stone cold.
Cold?
Yes. He must be losing interest in her.
It proves also that the phantom batter pudding hurler has had his gas pipe cut off. Taxi!
Yes, sir. Ore peru, Daniel Porojo.
The Bexhill gas works and step on it.
Very good, sir. Hooray, here we go. Listeners may be puzzled by a taxi sounding like bagpipes. The truth is, it is all part of the BBC New Economy campaign. They have discovered that it is cheaper to travel by bagpipes. And not only are they more musical, but they come in a wide variety of colors. See your local bagpipe officer and ask for particulars. You won't be disappointed.
It's all rather confusing, really.
Meantime, Neddy Seagoon had arrived at the Bexhill Gas and Coke Works.
Blimey!
Anyone about?
Yes, but any of them on top of you?
Good.
Yeah.
I'd like a list of people who haven't paid their gas bills. Thank you. Now, here's a good list. I'll try this number. I think we've got him this time. Hello?
10 Downing Street here.
I'm terribly sorry. No, it couldn't be him. Who would he want to throw a batter pudding at? Hello, police here.
This is Mr. Ratley. Someone's just thrown a batter pudding at me.
Months went by. I couldn't stop them. Still no sign of the dreaded hurler. Finally, I walked the streets of Bexhill at night, disguised as a human man. Then, suddenly... nothing happened. But it happened suddenly, mark you. Disappointed, I lit my pipe. Curse those Germans!
Oh, pardon me, my friend. I turned to see the speaker. He was a tall man wearing sensible feet and a head to match. He was dressed in the full white outfit of a Savoy chef. Around his waist were tied several thousand cooking instruments, and behind him he pulled a portable gas stove from which issued forth the smell of batter pudding. Could I borrow a match? You see, my gas has gone out and my batter pudding was just about to start browning.
Certainly. Here. No. Keep the whole box. I have another match at home.
So rich.
Well, thank you, monsieur. You have saved my batter pudding from getting cold. As you will agree, there's nothing quite so bad as being struck down with a cold batter pudding.
Oh, yes?
Of course. Well, good night, monsieur.
Good night. I watched the strange man as he pulled his gas stove away into the darkness. But I couldn't waste time watching him. My job was to find the dreaded batter pudding hurler. On December the 25th, the hurler changed his tactics. That day, Miss Bannister was struck with a Christmas pudding. Naturally, I searched the workhouse.
Shigun, the hurler is abroad.
What's that, sir?
A Miss Bannister has just received this letter. It was postmarked Africa. And inside was a portion of batter pudding.
He hasn't forgotten me, buddy.
So he's in Africa. Now we've got him cornered. I must leave at once. Where is my power-packed giant assistant? Blue Bottle!
I heard you call me my captain. I heard my captain call me. Wait for audience applause, not a sausage.
Blue Bottle? You and I are going to Africa.
Goody, goody. Can we take sandwiches?
Only for food. Any questions?
No.
I can't answer that, can you?
No.
Ignorant swine. Got that down, Sergeant's throat?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Right. We catch the very next troop convoy to Algiers. And who better to drive us out of the country than Ray Ellington and his quartet?
He must know something, but don't say nothing. He keeps us on rolling, keeps us on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, and them that plants them is soon forgotten. But old man river keeps us on rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain. Body or leg in a rack with pain. Tote that barge, lift that bale. Gets a little drunk and you lands in jail. I guess weary and sick of trying. Tired of living and feared of dying. But Old Man River keeps rolling along.
Bluebottle traveled by sea. To avoid detection by enemy U-boats, they spoke German throughout the voyage, heavily disguised as Spaniards. As an added precaution, they traveled on separate decks and wore separate shoes on different occasions. The ship was disguised as a train. To make the train seaworthy was done up to look like a boat and painted to appear like a tram. All rather confusing, really. Also on board were Major Bradlock and his regiment. When we were 10 miles from Algiers, we heard a dreaded cry.
Mine ahead! Dirty big mine ahead!
I say, what's happening here? Why are all these naughty men cowering down on the deck, the cowards?
There's a mine ahead.
Mine?
Funny, he wasn't dressed for swimming.
There's no need to worry, fellas, about the mine. It's one of ours.
Bloodnock and I floundered in the cruel sea.
Fortunately, we found a passing lifeboat and dragged ourselves aboard.
We had no oars, but luckily we found 2 outboard motors and we rowed with them.
Brilliant.
For 30 days we drifted to and fro. Then hunger came upon us.
Oh. If I don't eat soon, I'll die of hunger. And if I die, I won't eat soon. Wait a moment. Can I smell cooking, or do my ears deceive me?
He was right. Something was cooking. There in the other end of the lifeboat was a gas stove. Could this be the end of our search?
I'll knock on the oven door.
Just a minute, please. I'm in the bath.
Hello. Good morning. You?
Yes. Remember Bex Hill? I lent you the matches.
You don't want them back?
Emerov, I arrest you as the dreaded batter pudding hurler.
Sacre bleu.
Hands up, you devil. Don't move. This finger is loaded.
If you kill me, I promise you, you will never take me alive.
Wait. How can we prove he's the hurler?
That batter pudding in the corner of the stove is all the evidence we need. We've got him.
But it wasn't so easy. 40 days they drifted in an open boat.
Oh, I tell you, Sigurd, let's eat the batter pudding or we'll starve.
No. Do you hear me? No. That's the only evidence we've got. Though I must admit this hunger does give one an appetite.
We must eat it or die.
Never.
Very well, then. I shall stop playing my violin.
And that, we fear, is the end of our story, except, of course, for the end. We invite listeners to submit what they think should be the classic ending. Should Sigurd eat the batter pudding and live, or leave it and, in the cause of justice, die? Send your suggestions on a piece of batter pudding. Meantime, for those of you cretins who would like a happy ending, here it is. Darling, darling, will you marry me?
Of course I will, darling.
Thank you. Good night. That was The Goon Show, a recorded program featuring Peter Sellers, Harry Secombe, and Spike Milligan, with the Railington Quartet and Max Geldray. The orchestra was conducted by Wally Stott, script by Spike Milligan, announcer Wallace Greenslade, the program produced by Peter Eaton.
No.